Welcome to a special trade deadline edition of the Thunder Buddies podcast. I'm Joe Masato, joined by Joel Lorenzi. Joel, you made it. You're alive. The trade deadline is in the rearview mirror. How do you feel?
I'm wired right now. I'm not a coffee guy, but it's on my body right now. I'm feeling it. It's racing through me right now. How are you?
I'm good. I just went to Starbucks, actually, and got a pistachio latte, and I'm enjoying the heck out of it.
Right, and you seem pretty mellow because you are a coffee guy. This is not new to you. This is, you're like Quinn Snyder to what coffee does to you.
That's right, a little less intense than Quinn Snyder, but let's get to what happened today, because when you look back at trade deadline day 2024, we had some big trades leading up to the deadline, but really no big names on deadline day. I mean, Gordon Hayward is probably among the biggest. The Thunder acquires Gordon Hayward from the Hornets, and they ship Trey Mann, Vasily Micic, Davis Bertans, and a couple of second-round picks. I'll just get my quick thoughts out of the way because I want to more hear it from your perspective, but I saw this as a low-risk move for the Thunder. I mean, two guys who were completely out of the rotation in Mann and Bertans. Micic had come on a little bit lately. I'm skeptical he could have played in the playoffs. And in Gordon Hayward, you get a guy who is a vet. He's accomplished. He's still a good player when he's available. That's the whole key, is when he's available. And I think he's going to be a guy that could play in the playoffs. So what do you think about the deal, Joel?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting. One, because I think pretty much everybody on Earth thought that there was no way in hell Poku would still be part of the Thunder after the deadline. And he is. And Micic is instead the guy who was thrown in the fire. He'll be on his way to Charlotte, scared by the jewelers and hotels and everything that comes with being a Charlotte Hornet. I don't even
get that reference.
You haven't seen a video of them like in the hotel with the jeweler? And you know what, Joe, you're uncultured. Anyway.
You know who's no longer in Charlotte?
Who's that?
James Bucknight.
James Bucknight.
There's all these reports. Joel, I know before you got here, but you probably know. It's like, the Thunder's interested in James Bucknight. James Bucknight could not be more un-Thunder-like, and it turns out he's not an NBA player.
He's un-NBA-like, apparently.
Yeah, yes. That's right.
Yeah, but
he's un-Charlotte Hornets-like.
Which is like, you have to be. Imagine the type of person you got to be un-Charlotte Hornets-like. But all that being said, I think with Micic being thrown in there, there's obviously some team dynamics, but I think the thing that's going under the radar with this is that I think it clears the way more so, because like Poku's gonna be off the books anyway. Micic being tossed in there clears a bit more runway for, you know, an ambitious summer, which is which happens when you throw Bertans in a deal, among other things, and Hayward himself, Gordon Hayward himself, is owed $31 million this year. After that comes off the books, that's a ton in itself. Yeah. And so it just clears the way for a big summer for them. By then, I imagine the organization will know what direction it wants to take things, which was the big theme of this deadline and the season so far, is really sticking to its identity and what it hopes to see, not just throughout the regular season, but in its first playoff series, maybe in a playoff series after that. Just through this whole postseason run. And then with Micic, I think there are some people that are down. I don't know that I'm as down as these people about the Thunder losing Micic. Obviously, it's probably the lesser of, you know, between him and Poku, who you want to see walk. But I think the reason people are so down on it is because, you know, he's kind of steadied that second unit, those J-Dub lineups, especially in January, a grueling month like January. You know, he was a zone breaker. He doesn't have the burst or separation, but he made like heady plays that just made him kind of a fan favorite and gave him moments and steadied those lineups, really, more so than, you know, the Giddy Dub tandem has in that lineup. So sucks to see him go, but like you said, that guy, because of the burst, because of the lack of separation, probably wasn't going to be a playoff dude, and then bringing Gordon Hayward, you got some versatility there. You got a guy who they're probably going to not throw in an exactly similar position, but will be probably slotted in with Dub in those second units. And as a second side guy, can still score, is productive. But like you said, the key is availability. He's only played so many games this year. Over his past few seasons, I think the most he's played is 50 games in a season. So you're really banking on the availability in this whole thing. But again, low risk because they don't give up any playoff guys and they give up two future second rounders, which this team is bathing in draft picks anyway. So,
yeah, no, I agree with everything you just said. And one more note to the Hayward availability thing. I mean, since that just awful injury in his first game in Boston, even past that, there's been other things, dealing with a calf strain since late December. But it sounds like he was close to coming back anyway. And now that it seems like there's more motivation to actually be on a good team now and for the Thunder to get him back. So I'm not sure what that's going to look like. But he's a guy who's the availability question doesn't bother me as much because he was still playing like 30 plus minutes a night. And that's just not going to happen. Mm-hmm. In OKC, I mean, I think he's going to, I'm thinking like maybe 15 to 20 minutes a night. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if they just sit him on some nights to make sure he's healthy going into the playoffs. So it's going to be a different role for him. And he's still a good player. I mean, he's very well-rounded, career 37% three-point shooter. So I think that's going to help quite a bit, especially when he's out there with Shea just as another floor spacer. He's also big, and you want big wings. He's 6'7", 225. He used to be a pretty good defender. I admittedly haven't watched a ton of Hornets, but I assume he's slowed down a little bit on that end. But the size helps compensate for that a little bit. He's also a good passer and a decent rebounder. So I think he's going to like chip in a lot of areas. And I don't think he's going to start for the Thunder. But I do think there are scenarios in which he could close. I mean, on the nights Giddy's not closing, we've seen Cason Wallace, we've seen Kenrich Williams, Aaron Wiggins. I think you have to throw Hayward into that mix now.
Yeah, basically any spacer can get slotted in there at the end of games, especially around this time where Giddy's kind of being phased out of games. And it's like
would you still start Giddy?
I don't know. I'm not a decision maker, man. I think starting means so much less than people realize.
That's a great response. I totally agree with you. It's like, I don't really care who's starting. To me, I would keep starting Giddy because it's like, you don't want to wreck the guy's confidence even further. So it's kind of inconsequential. The starting lineup's been fine. But on a night-to-night basis, you might close with someone else, and that's more important.
Yeah, and like in fairness, like, The lineup, because it includes him in the starting lineup, the numbers don't pop as much as some other great starting lineups. Their net rating is great because it all evens out by the end of a game. But I've never felt like you can only point to on a handful of occasions as brutal as the stretches can be. There's only a handful of occasions where they've truly had to dig themselves out of a crazy early hole because he's starting. Mm-hmm. I think it all ends up coming back around anyway by the time he sits for stretches and stuff like that. Like, yeah, you don't want to start kind of in this foxhole position, but I agree with what you said, and I don't think it's ever been so detrimental where it's like, oh my gosh, you can't start him. Because then, and then if you don't start him, what's he supposed to do with that J-Dub lineup? That just typically has not worked. It just makes more sense with that starting unit. And then to close games, like the other night in Utah, when Utah's playing that zone, Giddy's in the left corner, and Lowry Markkanen, like, aggressively leaves that wing and Giddy to shoot that short three-pointer like that. You probably won't see stuff like that happen anymore because now, you know, the Thunder doesn't have to, like, as much as people are like, play Aaron Wiggins, like he's going to get time, but now you have the option to go to Gordon Hayward at the end of the game. You have Aaron Wiggins, like, you have this level of security on the wing that, like, it adds this double versatility that I think they've probably been begging for. And this is a guy that can contribute in a postseason, which, like, that's what makes this move truly additive to me. I mean, I know people wanted to see a big. I know Gordon Hayward's not exactly Cam Johnson, but When he plays, he's good, man. Like he's still productive.
Yeah, I think that's the point there, because yeah, he's older. He's 33. He's going to be 34 in March, but he does have playoff experience. Not a ton for a guy that old, but he's played in 29 playoff games. I think, I mean, he was on some, you know, before the Jazz really got rolling, and obviously had a lot of injuries with the Celtics and hasn't played in the playoffs with the Hornets, but he's a guy that's been in big games. I mean, we all remember the NCAA tournament runs with Butler. Joel, I don't know if you remember that, but
you're citing the Bush administration right now. Please knock it off.
I certainly do. I kind of, you mentioned a salary. I don't think, I mean, the Thunder is going to have the option to re-sign him. I see this more of a, this is a way to really clear the books going into the summer, giving them more options. I don't think, I mean, I don't know. I'm just guessing here that he wouldn't be a high priority to be re-signed in Oklahoma City.
Sure. But regardless, obviously they get a say in you know, his summer decision. I imagine after, you know, half a season here, he'll probably like OKC. That's kind of a thing that happens. He seems like a Thunder guy. And if they want to see him walk, like, so be it. They'll have so much room for an ambitious summer. I don't know. They don't have to start talking extensions on a couple of those guys for like another year, but they can.
And they gave up guys who weren't part of the future.
Right. And so they can map out their future as soon as this summer. And that's why, like, I know people are upset about a big, at least the Twitterverse is upset about a big, this and that, having, I mean, people want Andre Drummond. Like, Perk was on ESPN special crying about Andre Drummond. Like, that's extreme. Like, you don't got to be that type of rebound radicalist. Like, let this team rock out. They added a guy that could play in the playoff rotation. Let them rock out with that, you know, at a measure and go into the postseason and really see if this identity, what this identity could do for them, how far it could take them, what they need to tweak, rah, 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 because you got your core already. And so take that into the postseason, and then you have, like, a crazy summer to just map out the next few years and you know, make a decision on whether Giddy is the long-term fit, whether you bring in someone else, whether you feel like paying a fourth star or anything like that, what you're capable of, what the team needs, rah, rah, rah. Like, this gives you all that freedom.
Yeah, I was watching ESPN as well and saw Perkins say that, and it reminded me. I mean, I wrote about this last week, you know, this season being similar to the Thunder's 2009, 2010 season, when they broke out, they played the Lakers in the first round of the playoffs. They won 50 games, ended up playing the Lakers really tight. They decided, you know, they had a better look at that young core, decided what they needed. And then that next trade deadline is when they make the Jeff Green trade with Boston and bring in Perkins, who really was an important piece for the Thunder on those teams. So I think they want to see what they have. I understand that everyone wanted them to get a big, and that didn't happen. But, like, the Thunder wants to play this way, and they want to see if the way they want to play works in the playoffs. And just because it doesn't look normal to our basketball minds doesn't mean it won't necessarily work. And I don't know if the Thunder doesn't win the NBA Finals. First off, they're not going to do that anyway. But if they don't, it's not going to be like, oh man, if only they would have added Drummond or some rebounding. It's like, just like we lose sight of the big picture. This team's already so much better and so much further ahead of where we thought they would be. And it's like, we want to start like adding, like fine tuning them before they've even won a playoff series or been in a playoff series.
Yeah, and I've found variations of this idea in the past few weeks, like ways to word it. But as much as people hate to hear it, like, I don't think this team is expecting to win a championship. I don't know that, at least this year. I mean, nobody is expecting to win a championship this year, it seems. I think they, like, we've been saying that this team wants to really, you know, double down on its identity and see what it does, because this team didn't win 35 games saying, oh yeah, once we get to a certain amount of wins, we're going to just start playing like other teams. We're going to start conforming to what they do. We're going to be a more traditional team. We're going to add a traditional big, a role man, this and that. They got to this point because they experiment, because they do this and that, because they double down on their play style. And yeah, it might see them lose some games. They learn some tough lessons. They have maybe rough endings like the game in Utah the other night. But it's gotten them to a point where they're vying for first place in the West, which was pretty comfortable to me, especially when it seems like this window is just opening. I know people are iffy on, you know, how long those windows last and whatnot, but I think you could live with this year being that year. I mean, there has to, it has to happen. You know what I'm saying? That you can't ever have this this window per se, and you can't have it last as long as you hope it will without that first year of determining what has to happen, kind of like you mentioned with the Perkins year.
A subplot of this trade that I want you to figure out is, I mean, we're going to find out what number Gordon Hayward's going to wear, but he's only worn 20 in his career, and Gary Payton wore 20, and the Thunder recognizes old Sonics history, and that number's retired, so I don't know if there's going to be a phone call to Gary Payton or what, but, you know, I like jersey numbers, Joel.
That would be interesting, and maybe on his jersey, you know, if he's in discussion with Perk was calling him Gordon Haywood, so maybe he can get Haywood on the back of his jersey.
Gordon Haywood.
Haywood 20.
Let's talk about the other side of this deal for Charlotte and the outgoing players. Let's start with Trey Mann, just because former first-round pick who at times showed a lot of promise before last season. I picked him as sort of like a breakout six-man type guy, microwave scorer, and we've seen flashes of that. It's just been inconsistent, and as the Thunder's roster has gotten better, it's guys have just passed him up. But I think this is a good deal for the Hornets to get a look at what Trey Mann can do, give him some more run, and see if anything is there. So I like Trey a lot and hope he's successful, but what do you think of Trey and potentially getting a second chance in Charlotte?
Yeah, in Spurs, he's just a really talented, creative scorer. I think we saw that during some of the ugly rebuild years, you know, some of the, you know, high scoring numbers he could put up. I do feel like Charlotte, obviously I'm not a Charlotte expert. I pray for the person who is, but it feels like they have a few more or less Trey Manns there. Like, they have some similar modes over there. Obviously, I don't know that they know what they're doing anyway. Like, they don't know what direction.
I know that they don't know what they're doing.
Sure. So with that being said, like, Trey Mann can't hurt. And I would probably play him. I mean, they got Nick Smith. Like, I would probably play him over Nick Smith. See what you get from him now. But even with that being said, there's room to spread your legs there for him, which is good for him, because I think people were like clamoring here about, oh, he can't play. But that's just the reality of where the Thunder is now. Like, there is no room for him to come in and do what he does inside his offense. There is no room for a guy like Poku, you know, who obviously remains, but like, that,
a lot
that's
of
a guy,
Poku mentions from you today, Joel.
I know, but I'm taking this as a chance to say, like, for the people who are clamoring for the guys at the end of the bench, you got to realize, like, you know, nobody's playing as many people as these fans want Mark to play. And when you look at the group that's outside looking in, you look at a guy like Trey who, you know, has a skill set and a vacuum that just, it was hard to apply here with how far along this team is now. And I know people don't want to hear that, but it's mostly true. And then with Poku, that's a guy who missed a couple crucial development periods in the team kind of passing by. Like, these are guys that, you know, the development of this team and where it's headed just kind of passed them by. And Poku could very well still be a good player elsewhere. But I don't know how much of a chance he's going to get here now. And then Trey Mann, obviously you saw, I don't know that you could read frustration from him, but there was a lot of DMPs from him, which I imagine he didn't like, because, you know, back in the day, he could have a 30-point game here, this and that. You know, like, now he'll have that chance elsewhere for a team that's the definition of unserious.
Yeah. I mean, I retweeted that video from his 30-point game at MSG where man, he was so quick with the line when the lights went out. He said he shot the lights out. That was my favorite Trey Mann moment. And Trey Mann seemed to, I mean, you saw like J-Dub post about him. He seemed to be really well liked in the Thunder's locker room. But, you know, obviously just like I think him and Wiggins are really close, especially their lockers are by each other. So,
And it's sad because that dude just had a kid this past week. That's the especially sad part of this business is that you'd have to get up and move your family the same week that your family expands. Like that's just the business, and it sucks for him for sure, which is something I think is also gone under the radar as part of the nature of today.
With Micić, do you think he regrets coming to the NBA?
No,
I know this is a I don't mean that in a mean way.
You're getting deep, man. Yeah,
I just like question. I asked that because for so long, Thunder fans anticipated this guy making the move. Mm-hmm. I was constantly pushing back on it because I had heard nothing to indicate that he was even interested in coming to the NBA. And then it suddenly happened. And I think because there was that much buildup to it, that a lot of Thunder fans just built this guy up to be something that he probably wasn't. And he's a good player, but I don't think he was going to be in a playoff rotation. I think he would be picked on constantly on the defensive end. And while he's a genius passer, and I do mean genius, and he helped facilitate some of those second units, he's not shot the ball well at all. I know it's a small sample, but I say this because I don't think it's a huge loss for the Thunder. I don't know. Maybe he's going to relish this chance in Charlotte. I mean, you mentioned they're an unserious team. You kind of have a leash to do whatever the heck you want to do. So maybe Micić is going to thrive and put up some highlights, and the fans in Serbia are going to love it. But it's just, what a weird thing. You come over to the NBA, you're playing sparingly, but for a team that's one of the most exciting in the league, and now you're in Charlotte.
Right. I think that's probably the most depressing part of it for him. If he regrets anything about his experience, is that he'll be in Charlotte with the jewelry boys and you know, the very unserious boys. That's the only thing. I imagine this was like one of the settings, like I didn't get to know Micić super well. But like, I imagine like the settings he would be comfortable in coming from overseas, like the Thunder felt like one of the most welcoming NBA settings to where you could get quickly acclimated versus like Charlotte. I can't imagine what Charlotte's like compared to the Thunder for who he is, what his role has to be, chemistry stuff, all that. It's just stuff to consider. I don't know that he regrets coming over here. This is the pinnacle of basketball. I think he had to at least try it. I think he had to at least see it for himself and see what punches he could give it. And he could very well, you know, carve out a role over there. I don't know.
Yeah, I take that back because I do respect the decision he made of like, it would have been very easy to stay in Europe where you're like superstar, former MVP.
And like, he did what he was going to do over there. He got like, he got MVP, won stuff. Like I imagine he was hungry for more.
But like at the same time, like he could have stayed there and like, sure, there would have been questions of how it would translate to the NBA, but he could have avoided, I'm not saying he's failing in the NBA, but he could have avoided, like, you know, being an end of the bench type guy, but he's given it a go. So anyway, that's pretty cool. The Vasa Micić era is over.
It's over. I somehow outlasted Micić. Maybe not if you count all the years he was supposed to, that they had his rights, but I outlasted Micić's season, which is crazy.
Are they going to keep Bertans? Have we heard? I know this is the main part of the deal.
I have not heard. We have not heard as a people.
Boy, he gets some. He's going to get some shots up if
allowed. Isn't he everywhere? Isn't he going to get shots up anywhere? There ain't a place on earth he couldn't hoist that ball up, man. We'll always remember. We'll always have the memory of, what was that, in Dallas, I think, in Dallas this season, where he was already shooting before he even fully had possession of the ball. That dude is something else, man. Shout out Dallas, bro.
Anything we're missing from I want to mention the other trade the Thunder was involved with. It was more in the weeds, but
very pressed.
They're trading still. Yeah, the second least favorable of their 2024 pick, so a bad pick in what's perceived to be a bad draft for a chance to swap with the Mavericks in 2028. And at that point, who knows where Luka's at? Who knows where the Mavericks are at? The Thunder's betting, hey, we're probably going to be better than the Mavericks in 2028. It's worth the upside swing. So when you've got all these picks, this is something you can try to do to leverage, you know, seemingly bad picks into something that might, and I emphasize might, turn out to be a better pick.
Yeah, Percy just finds, he continuously finds ways, the slickest ways, to call his constituents butt down the line. Like, he really thinks, he's like bet on the Clippers being whatever down the line. He's clearly betting on Dallas to be whatever in 2028, or to not have Luka and to maybe be entering a different era, as I think Luka enters free agency either the summer before or something like that. Like that, where there's a chance that they might not have him, and if they do have him, maybe it's unstable there. It's Kyrie. I would almost bet my life that, you know what? I mean,
I would bet your life.
No, you shouldn't. Let me bet something less serious. I would bet something serious that Kyrie isn't there anymore by then. Maybe not even by next year. Because we're in 2024 right now. 4 years in the NBA is like, it's a long time, man.
There's no chance Kyrie's gonna be there.
So Sam is just betting on the landscape in Dallas looking worse than the landscape here, which is something he did earlier this year with in that James Harden trade. He did similar and traded out of a first rounder for a swap, I think, in that trade too. Down the line, betting on, I think it was the Clippers, lack of success down the line. So very Presti-like.
So as we await the Gordon Hayward arrival in Oklahoma City, anything else on the Thunder's trade deadline? I mean, we talked about them not getting a big, blah, blah, blah. Any other Thunder thoughts?
And I kind of wrote about this yesterday, but I put out their solutions to the things they had to address, if anything, because I do think, I mean, it's hard to say that, the 35-1 team is riddled with problems. I think the only one, you know, now they're not even go down that path. I just provided solutions, and the alternate realities were really like what I thought were going to happen, to be honest. I thought that the Thunder could have at least got involved on one of those forwards, but essentially they kind of did, just a low risk, different type of wing than I think a lot of people anticipated, which the question obviously with Gordon Hayward is availability versus Cam Johnson, which was like, what would the package be like? Obviously different problems there. But I think Sam just found a way to make the lowest risk move possible and still get, I think, what they thought would move the meter post deadline, in terms of keeping our identity and adding somebody that can contribute. So I just wanted to put that out there. Not as a, maybe as like a footnote for my story from yesterday, because it seems some people enjoy that. I don't know if it's because they really, 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 really wanted a big. But I kind of like really, 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 really did not expect a big to be pulling up to OKC. So especially not Andre Drummond. Good God.
Robin Lopez is available.
Hey, I got told to stop cursing on here. I almost just swear it out of my mind. Robin Lopez, give me a break. What'll probably happen is the Thunder will do something slick, like convert somebody's contract, right, or do something like that. I don't know how active they'll be on the buyout market, especially for a guy like Robin Lopez. Yeah.
My guess would be, I mean, maybe they could go the buyout route, but we've seen them reward their two-way guys later in the year, give them standard deals, whether it be a Lindy Waters, Olivier Saar, I don't know. And then it lets them go find the next diamond in the rough, sign them to a two-way deal, and kind of keep churning through that. So we'll see. Before we go, Joel, give me one winner and one loser You can't say the Thunder for either from today's deadline.
Winner and loser, both the Thunder. Why would they be
winner.
Both anyway?
Who's your winner?
Why would they be both anyway? Winner is probably Dallas. They made good moves. They look Dallas. Cool. Yeah, they look cool, so on like paper, PJ. Man. I am a fan of PJ. I'm a fan of PJ next to Luka because I'm a firm believer in Luka really just needs average dudes next to him. And I think PJ is above average. Really feels like a guy that could thrive next to Luka and that Luka could thrive beside. Just a solid scorer, fine rebounder, good size, versatile, just a fine player that has suitors. And then Gafford is another big presence, role threat, rim guy that could probably split some minutes with Lively as he comes into his own, and is better than Rashawn Holmes. So I think Dallas did okay, man. They're taking, and they got off of Grant Williams, which, you know, a friend of mine argued the point that, you know, as much of a headache as Grant Williams was to this point for Dallas fans, like, you probably really want to get your perspective on Grant Williams in a postseason setting, which is just two straight coaches now who have not given him the chance, or a real chance, let's say, at, you know, his postseason role in Missoula and now Jason Kidd. They got off Grant, which is, a thing a lot of people like. So I guess it was win. So they're the winners. And then losers, it's got to be the Bulls, man. People who know me well enough by now know I'm from Chicago. I've never been a Bulls fan. They're just habitually disappointing. And this is just continuing that trend, man. Their lack of movement, how content they are with being mid. Is
they unbelievable. Can't get enough of that play-in tournament.
It's unlike anything I've seen. And I think almost as depressing is the fact that the last semblance of hope they had was when Lonzo Ball was healthy, man. And by the way, Lonzo Ball has missed two straight years of NBA basketball. But for Lonzo Ball to be the deciding factor of, hey, is our franchise going in the right direction? Like, that's kind of depressing when you say that out loud. But to have not made a move in three calendar years coming up in August, that's absurd. Not made a move, at least as far as players go, dealing players. They've dealt picks and stuff like that. But they haven't dealt a player, done a player trade, since August of 2021. Mm-hmm. How unbelievable does that sound out loud when you hear that?
It's crazy. And, like, there are some of these big market teams that are just afraid to tank and go all in on a rebuild. And then they just, like, kind of float in this middle ground in limbo and no one cares about them, and that's where the Bulls are, and they're just delaying the inevitable. The Bulls, a big time loser.
Are the Bulls Nets, a big market? Have you heard that? The Bulls are a big market,
yeah,
huh?
Chicago, big market.
Yeah. and by the way, let's not say team, because I read a report today. I can't remember the reference, but I read a report today that ownership had approved a full-out rebuild, and AK said, no, I'm not ready for
That's
a rebuild.
Ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. It's the most disappointing franchise in basketball right now.
I have the Bulls were also on my list for losers. The Raptors are a loser to me. I just don't know really what they're doing. I mean, I did like getting off of Siakam and Ananobi, but like the Olynyk deal, I didn't really... Olynyk could have helped a lot of teams, but hey, he's going back home.
Sure.
Winners, the Knicks. Everyone loves the Knicks. The Knicks are making good moves.
I
really like Bogdanovich and Burks. They're going to help. And the Phoenix Suns. I think Royce O'Neal is going to be a solid rotation piece down there in Phoenix, and a guy that, you know, some have hypothesized that could have helped the Thunder.
I thought we said winner. How are you going down the line and naming multiple teams, dude?
All right, Joel. That's all I got today. I got to go.
I couldn't tell because you're going down the line, going through the whole NBA.
Happy trade deadline. You're first.
Yep.
Thanks, did well. Thank you guys so much for listening to the Thunder Buddies podcast, and we will be back with you soon.